Tested is sponsored by Duke Health, home of the Pandemic Response Network, helping communities stay safe and connected during the COVID-19 pandemic by partnering with local school, business, and faith-based organizations to launch COVID-19 system support programs in their own communities. Learn more at pandemicresponsenetwork.org.
This is Tested from WUNC, a look at how we're responding to the day's challenges in North Carolina and the South. I'm Leonida Inge. In the last 2 weeks in the country, U.S. troops evacuated more than 123,000 people out of Afghanistan. That includes Afghans and Americans, but mostly Afghans. The process has been called 2 weeks of chaos and 20 years of war. There's no other way to put it. The last big influx of Afghan refugees to America was after the 1979 Soviet invasion of Afghanistan. They came with special government visas and settled from California to Georgia. Today, there's a good chance some of the new Afghan refugees will end up right here, calling North Carolina home. And cities like Durham are ready and willing.
Let me be clear that in Durham, we will take them in. We will resettle them here. We will support them in every way we can. We will embrace them and we will love them.
That's Durham Mayor Steve Shule. He was joined this week by other elected officials, refugee settlement agents, and by Omed Ahmadzai, who came to Durham from Afghanistan in 2015.
You know, the translator, it was like a light for the U.S. Army, for U.S. government. If you don't have light, you cannot go in the dark. You cannot find anything. I want, once again, from our president, President Joe Biden, to do not break their promise to help those people. They work in a hard situation, shoulder to shoulder with U.S. Army, with U.S. government.
It's not going to be easy resettling and helping the people who worked shoulder to shoulder with the United States government during America's longest war. And with that comes trauma, struggle, and strife. Netta Alam is a Durham County Commissioner.
And I know that leaving your home for the unknown is a terrifying leap of faith. Our beloved Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam himself was a refugee, having fled Mecca in order to escape persecution. Through his strength and resilience, we are all here today. And through your strength and resilience, your families will continue to grow in your new home of Durham.
So this surge in need for refugees comes at a time when the refugee resettlement apparatus is, I don't know if I want to say in a state of tatters, but it's definitely diminished in its capacity to be able to deal with this need.
Shane Ellison is the supervising attorney at Duke Law School's Immigrant Rights Clinic. He helps students in the representation of non-U.S. citizens and community organizations, especially in times like these.
This crisis precipitated by the rapid advance of the Taliban is really creating a greater level of urgency to address the needs of Afghan refugees than at least what I've observed or experienced in the past. You know, clearly this isn't the first refugee crisis, but the level of urgency to get people out and to get people into the United States feels, if not unprecedented, at least recently unprecedented. A lot of us who want to do something here in the United States are sort of scrambling to figure out what can be done and what needs to be done.
Does a part of this scramble have to do with so many Afghan refugees who are coming to the United States and to other countries? I know a lot of reports have said, you know, like it's well over, you know, 100,000. And, you know, that's the size of a city in North Carolina, you know?
Yeah, that's right. So a State Department spokesman gave the figure of 123,000 people were evacuated from Afghanistan. They were approximating about 6,000 of those were U.S. citizens. So the remainder would have been likely Afghan nationals. The Defense Department, in another report, has indicated that they estimate about 7,000 of that figure were SIVs, so a form of visa available for individuals who've supported the U.S. government efforts in Afghanistan. But what that tells you is that the majority of the figure are individuals that don't neatly fit into either of those categories. There's probably a certain number who are lawful permanent residents, others who may have had some form of refugee designation, but the vast majority of them are coming in on humanitarian parole. At the very end of July, Congress passed a law that expanded the number of visas eligible for SIV Afghans, and so that number was raised to 8,000. So you can still see, right, Congress and the administration's expectations of folks who would need to be evacuated kind of being dwarfed by the actual figure. Resettlement agencies, of course, are stepping up pretty considerably to provide aid to those who are entering as refugees or as SIVs. But there's a lot of people who, as I said a moment ago, are coming in on humanitarian parole. And at least under current law, individuals with humanitarian parole aren't eligible for the same package of benefits and assistance and services that resettlement agencies offer to refugees and SIV holders. So it's going to be nonprofit legal service providers, private immigration attorneys, and the community writ large that's going to need to come together and provide financial support and other forms of support to help Afghans resettle in the United States.
So, I don't know. Are there any more policies needed and laws needed to make this transition, like I said, as smooth as possible, you know, in the United States? I know we can't speak for what's going on in Europe, but for the United States, for here to make this, especially for those people who we say don't have maybe the right papers, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. No, it's a great question. There's a handful, and I it's a big handful. It's thousands, right? But it's still a handful of the overall number of individuals entering who are coming with SIVs, who are coming with refugee status. The vast majority of people are coming with humanitarian parole. And humanitarian parole is not a permanent status. That is not a form of status that translates into a permanent status. Parole is usually given in one, and in the case of Afghan refugees, perhaps up to 2-year increments. People can reapply for parole at the end of that period, but otherwise they're going to need to navigate a very complex immigration legal system to translate that temporary permission to enter and be in the United States into a more permanent form of status. Some people have talked about designating Afghanistan for temporary protected status as a sort of short-term measure that the president can do to provide some protection for Afghan refugees while perhaps Congress is thinking about a more longer-term solution. Afghan refugees will, of course, be able to apply for asylum, and I think many of those claims will be quite strong given conditions in Afghanistan. But to your point about whether additional legal changes could be needed, you know, I think it would be fabulous if Congress stepped up here and provided a cleaner and easier pathway to status for Afghans who have been paroled into the United States in recognition of the tremendous service that they have provided to the United States in partnership throughout the course of this, you know, 20-year-long conflict.
So do you think there's a good chance many Afghan refugees will end up, say, in North Carolina or in the southern United States. We know most of them that are already here don't live here necessarily. They're in California, Texas, or Michigan, and just states far away from here. But I wonder, will that change this time around? Will we see a lot of Afghan refugees in this part of the country?
You know, it's hard to say where Afghan refugees will resettle. As news reports have indicated that families are starting to come in. And, you know, there were a large number of Afghan refugees whose first stop in the United States was at Fort Lee in Virginia, just north of here. So there probably will be some folks who end up settling in the Triangle area. But how many? It's hard to say at this point. I think one other thing, just to put this most recent need in context, is that during the Trump administration, refugee numbers hit all-time lows. The number of refugees that were processed during the Trump years were lower even than in the years immediately following 9/11, right? So in the sort of 40-plus year history of the Refugee Act and the modern refugee processing scheme, the numbers were at an all-time nadir under the Trump administration. And that has a consequence, because resettlement organizations receive resettlement and placement funds per capita. So the number of refugees they resettle, they get a certain amount of money from the federal government to support their operations. And so as a consequence of really dramatic reductions in refugees resettled during the Trump years, a number of resettlement organizations had to cut back staff, had to close down programs, and some resettlement organizations closed shop altogether. So this surge in need for refugees comes at a time when the refugee resettlement apparatus is, I don't know if I want to say in a state of tatters, but it's definitely diminished in its capacity to be able to deal with this need. And I think that's another thing that needs to be prominent in the conversation, is that in order for resettlement agencies to do their jobs and to do them well, they're going to need support. And relatedly, because so many folks are coming in not through the refugee resettlement pathway, the need for legal services separate and apart from resettlement organizations could be really significant.
That's Shane Ellison, supervising attorney at Duke Law School's Immigrant Rights Clinic. North Carolina has already begun to welcome Afghan families recently evacuated. A spokesman for World Relief Durham says that could rise to 100 or more families in the coming months.
I want to say, thank you for serving American troops in Afghanistan, American government there in Afghanistan. And we are so sorry for those people who lost their life in Afghanistan in suicide bomb at airport. And I lost my cousin too in the suicide bomb in Kabul.
Omed Ahmadzai of Afghanistan, who resettled in Durham, North Carolina in 2015, was likely unaware that one of the 13 U.S. troops who died in that suicide bombing in Kabul last week was stationed at Fort Bragg. Staff Sergeant Ryan Knaus was 23 years old. He had served in Afghanistan before, seeing combat. WUNC's Jay Price spoke with his widow, Alina Knaus.
We worked together in high school. Yeah, we worked together at just a small little pizza place when we were 15. So he finally wore me down. I said yes, and that was it. I was hooked. He had one of those things where you just couldn't hate him. He was just, he had this energy, and everybody's been talking about it. He was charismatic. He had, this ability to, really get to know you, even if you didn't want him to. He was just kind. You couldn't help but love him. He was someone that I don't think anyone could ever say anything bad about. And that's what I loved about him, is no matter how angry I was that day or how annoyed I was with the fact that I was a 16-year-old trying to make a car payment on minimum wage, you know, he made it better. He just was a fixer, and it bled over into his work life, his love life, I mean, everything. He just had a magic touch. Like, he could fix anything. And that's what I loved about him. God, he was an underwear model. I have never met anyone who felt like a brick, if that makes sense. I kept telling him, I was like, you're gonna have to, like, it's not comfortable to lay on you, like, you feel like concrete, because he really did. I mean, he never stopped. I mean, he was at the gym multiple times a day, he was running, I mean, he was a big guy, very muscular, and very proud of that. He just wanted to serve his country, which was, I think, being an army brat and having my dad in the army, I was like, okay, you know, I'm very familiar with that world and you're not. And if that's what you want to do, do it. And it's all he wanted. He thought that was the best way he could help people. He had only been over there, I think, two or three weeks. My sister-in-law and I had been at TJ Maxx that morning, just buying a few extra pieces here and there, and we always wind up in the baby section. And there was this little pink cardigan, and I was just obsessed with it. I was like, I have to get this. He's gonna love it. Like, I have to get this. She's like, you're not even gonna know if it'll be a boy or a girl when you guys, you know, go for it. But one of the last things I said to him on a FaceTime call was, you know, when you get back, we need to be in baby mode. So when he got back, I had everything figured out, all the money saved, everything planned, and the rooms that are moving now. That was the intent. That was our next step. Anytime he leaves, or anytime he left, rather, I would take on a really big project. One, to keep myself busy mentally, but two, because he was a very frugal person. And so I kept telling him, I was like, when you're gone, I'm remodeling the house. Like, this time, like, we're doing it for real. And there was this tile that was driving me crazy, and he couldn't care about it. But I had been ripping up the tile, and because of this timeline, when he was slated to get back, I knew I had to stick to a very strict schedule. So we had been up late that night, my sister-in-law and I, who was here because my brother is currently in Qatar, and I just remember we were so tired, and it was so late, and we were covered in, you know, mortar from where we were tiling the floor, and we just had a few more pieces, and it's going to sound so pitiful, but I had picked up these, like, certain tiles and put our initials in there, and I was like, this is going to be so cheesy, and he's going to hate this, but I put just A&R in the year, and we only had, like, 15 at most, of these little tiny penny tiles we were just trying to get down so it could cure and I could be on my timeline for him to get back. And right as I had that one in my hand, I heard someone knocking on the door. And we were really scared. It's just two of us in a house. And it was, I mean, God, it had to be around 12, 1 a.m. And I'm like, oh my God, like, I don't have, like, anything, you know, like, what am I going to do? So I just try and peek around the corner at my front door, which has glass and it's see-through, and it's like a movie. I just saw the uniforms, and I just knew. I'm sure she remembers more of it than I do, because she was terrified hearing me. I think I screamed, and they asked, they were like, are you Alina Knaus? And I was like, yeah, I am. And they were like, ma'am, we are so sorry. And I just screamed. I was just like, no. No, there has to be a mistake. No. I thought they were here for her, looking for her, because she wasn't on post, but I knew the second they opened their mouths, and it was just, it was gut-wrenching. ¶¶ we live in a Victorian, despite his wishes. He wanted something new. I wanted something old. And of course, he was always so accommodating of me. So I wanted to put down the vintage black and white tiles that are always in like the older homes. And so I just bought sheets of white tile and picked each of them by hand and laid out a special pattern. I do a lot of art, like very artistic. So I had made up a design, a kind of like a mosaic. And so I had just like the 8 little black tiles left in my hand that would have been our initials. I finished it. It's gonna be here forever until the next person moves in and they hate the tile. But I took that night sobbing and just put in the initials. That way, there was always that piece. He was helping people, and if he was the last, I would be grateful that no one else would ever feel what I'm feeling. And you can't tell anyone how to feel, but God, it doesn't feel good. And so to know that, yes, I'm in shambles and I'm hurting, but that no mother, father, wife, brother, sister ever has to feel such emptiness, such, I mean, the gravity of it, you know, I would be grateful to know he was the last.
Alina Knaus is the widow of Staff Sergeant Ryan Knaus. He died last week in Afghanistan after a suicide bombing at the airport in Kabul. He is believed to be among the last American service members killed in the war. That's it for this episode of Tested. Thanks to Will Michaels for producing this episode. Dave DeWitt is the editor. I'm Leonita Inge. Thanks for listening.